Welcome back to Red Flags Rising. Today, Brent Carlson and I are going to discuss two important developments. The first is the release of an executive summary of the reports that the Secretaries of State and Commerce provided to the President in response to the America First trade policy. And then Brent and I are going to preview for the audience an upcoming article that we have with World ECR Magazine on the glass onion of the knowledge standard under the U.S. Export Administration regulations. We're going to peel back and hopefully see through that onion together. Brent, great to see you.
Great to be here, Mike. We're going to peer through that glass onion, and it's going to be simpler than what a lot of people think.
Today is Monday, April 7th. It's just after 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern, just in case anything changes. For those of you who may not remember or the America First trade policy top of mind every morning like Brent does, this, you'll recall, is something that the president signed his very first day in office. It directed his cabinet to issue several reports to him on a variety of trade-related topics. One of those topics was of particular interest to us. In Section 4C of the America First trade policy, the president directed the Secretaries of State and Commerce to assess and make recommendations regarding how to identify and eliminate loopholes in existing export controls, especially those that enable the transfer of strategic goods, software, services, and technology to countries who are strategic rivals and their proxies.
One theme of this show is simplify, simplify, simplify. The whole marching order for the America First trade policy in terms of export controls is to eliminate loopholes and increase enforcement driven by these priority national security issues. Going back to that earlier pod that we did and that article, when loopholes create liability pitfalls, some of these perceived loopholes are not loopholes, but liability pitfalls instead. It comes down to how is the export compliance program leveraging the high probability standard in terms of its KYC and KYCC efforts. Know your customer, know your customer's customer, which was signaled by Secretary Lutnick in his remarks at the BIS update conference just a few weeks ago.
That's totally right, Brent. What we did see on Thursday of last week, on April 3rd, was the executive summary of the reports that the secretary has provided to him.
The report itself remains non-public. Chapter 19 of the executive summary is entitled Review of U.S. Export Controls, which refers to Section 4C in the America First trade policy. It has two simple sentences to it. It states, the United States must ensure that its advanced technology does not flow to our adversaries. Export controls should be simpler, stricter, and more effective, while promoting U.S. dominance in AI and asserting global technological leadership. I think what stands out here is simpler, stricter, and more effective. Mike, we've been talking about different ways on how compliance programs from the corporate side and from the enforcement side can be simpler and more effective. What are some ways that's going to be made possible?
One of the ways is the increased emphasis on the high probability standard. This is an alternative to the actual awareness definition of knowledge in the U.S. Export Administration regulations. It's something we've been diving into for a long time. We have coming out early this week an article with World ECR, where the editor, Tom Blass, is a good friend of ours and has done great work with that publication for a long time. The article is about peeling back and seeing through the glass onion that is the knowledge standard under the EAR. The glass onion metaphor was made famous by the Beatles song by the same name from the White Album. How we're applying it in this particular context is that it's something that seems really complicated and multi-layered, but once you understand what each layer is, you can see right through it.
Why did we pick the glass onion? The image of the glass onion conveys transparency and simplicity. When we're out talking with folks, we've heard all the time, and we've heard in other past contents, well, it's complicated. This is complicated. That's complicated. But when you're looking at enforcement risk, it actually is a different ballgame. It can be quite simple. Protecting a company against enforcement risk is going to come down to being able to leverage that high probability standard.
That's absolutely right, especially if they're looking at tools in the toolbox that haven't really been fully leveraged yet. One thing that I think is challenging for anyone looking at the EAR is to understand what is meant when people say that the Export Administration regulations are a strict liability regime.
Let's unpack that a little bit. I think that would be helpful. to peel back the layers of this glass onion.
What's interesting is this goes back to the early days, hundreds of years ago, of the English common law tradition. The common law required for criminal liability that the king or the queen, now the government, demonstrate a guilty mind. So a purposefulness to do something that was wrong and an ability to distinguish wrong from right. For all aspects of the EAR, that is an element that has to be proven by the Department of Justice if they want to bring a criminal prosecution. But Brent, for civil administrative remedies, that's not an element. So in that respect, the EAR are strict liability across the board. In Latin, in law school, we refer to that as the mens rea element.
So what that means is if the government's going to do an enforcement action on, let's say, me and my company, they don't have to show and demonstrate intent at all. It's only my actions. What about actual knowledge?
Well, that's where it varies a bit, Brent. So absolutely, do not have to demonstrate a criminal intent to impose administrative fines. Court decisions suggest that the government could adopt a strict liability regime as to any export controls at all, where not only would the criminal intent be not relevant, but also of what you were aware, your knowledge would also be irrelevant. This is what we called in law school the actus reus, or the awareness of your actions. There are some aspects of the EAR, for example, shipping to somebody who's on the entity list, where your knowledge, your awareness does not matter at all. You could be totally unaware of the actions that you're taking. If a shipment goes out the door to a party on the entity list, all BIS has to do is hold up the shipment and say, look, this happened, therefore we can fine you. In other aspects of the EAR, the regulations from BIS add a knowledge requirement. This is where the definition of knowledge is obviously then hugely important. You see this a lot in the end use and end user catch-all provisions.
So let's go through these layers. So we have the outer layer, actual knowledge, a middle layer, reason to know. And then we have the core layer, the awareness of a high probability. Let's start with that outer layer, the actual knowledge, because there's a line in our article where we describe that common pitfall with this layer, the actual knowledge piece, is that is really not in its application, but it's in its overemphasis, where I think a lot of folks still assume that there has to be actual knowledge. Why don't we start there and then go into the inner core of the high probability standard?
It's a good place to start the journey for sure, Brent. This is a standard where the documents on their face demonstrate that the shipment is going to somebody to whom a license would be required under one of these catch-all provisions, for example.
One thing that I think is another risk factor is the common knowledge doctrine, because you could have actual knowledge sitting somewhere within the company, but maybe it doesn't get to the light of day for the legal and compliance teams.
That's a great point, is that it might be sitting there, but not really clearly evident to any one particular party. But because the government could aggregate the collective knowledge of various employees and attribute the aggregated knowledge to the company, it would look, certainly in the charging order, like the company was aware of all of these things, even if any individual within the company would not have been.
Let's go down into the middle layer, the reason to know. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Brent, this is the OFAC standard. For people familiar with OFAC enforcement actions, this is a widely used alternative definition of knowledge that OFAC uses to penalize people who may be putting their heads in the sand. The shipping label doesn't say Tehran on it, but the commercial invoice does. And maybe the trade compliance team wasn't given a copy of the commercial invoice, but other people in the company certainly had it. We used in the article a case litigated in federal court. There, the court said that a reason to know was established when the exporter had a freight manifest that recorded a shipment directly to an address in Tehran, and where the purchaser's public-facing website had several references to an affiliation between the named purchasing entity and a sister entity in Iran.
So this then gets us to the core layer of the awareness of a high probability. How does that take us one layer in from the reason to know?
It's one layer in because even if you don't have references of an improper activity on the face of the documents or on the face of the correspondence, this layer could apply where the overall facts and circumstances of a shipment suggest that there is a high probability of a violation of the Export Administration Regulations. This is where, for example, BIS could look at holistic information across the whole company. Is this a normal business activity? Is this a normal customer? Things like, is a trading company in Dubai ever the end user of anything? This is also a place where BIS could look, for example, at changes over time. Take a dynamic view of how trade flows and customer relationships have changed over time. A classic example of this, which BIS has listed many times with little red flags next to it in its public guidance, is the new white knight customer who appears after the further Russian invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, wanting to buy the same products and not really interested in warranty coverage, instruction manuals, or installation services. Those are the types of things where even if everything you're told, everything on the document, everything on the purchase orders, everything on the invoices, even everything on the shipping documents, doesn't say, using that example, Russia, BIS would consider you to be on a high probability awareness.
That also sounds like a similar fact pattern or similar characteristics that we described earlier, talking about that article, When Loopholes Create Liability Pitfalls, and that concept of entity shifting. So if you got a customer that goes on the entity list, then all of a sudden an affiliate of that customer then starts getting that same product, same quantity right around that same time. That sounds a lot like high probability applied as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely, Brent. Why is this standard something that we think, based on the executive summary of the report that the Secretary of Commerce just gave to the president, BIS is more likely to look to? This is the type of standard where if the United States feels that its national security and economic security objectives are being frustrated through gamesmanship, this is the standard that's sitting right there for them to use, because it is something that allows them to bring a circumstantial case that would then essentially put the burden on the company. We saw, you and I both, for 20 plus years of Foreign Corrupt Practices Act experience, each of us, that this was the standard on which the enforcement actions often turned. There is a prohibition in the FCPA not only on direct bribe payments, but also on bribe payments made indirectly through third parties, where there is an awareness of a high probability that there's corruption involved.
In the Glass Onion article, we noted a number of guidance documents that BIS had put out, the one from July 10th, 2024, that reemphasized the high probability standard as a reminder to industry. Following 1 month after that, the first enforcement action that cited the high probability standard in the settlement documents. Then you can see on October 9th, BIS emphasizing the high probability standard in its public guidance for financial institutions. Toward the end of the last administration, there was a move toward reemphasizing this under the new America First trade policy that's going to be picked up and continued. So we would expect to see some guidance coming out from BIS that would talk about this specifically. Any thoughts on that, Mike?
Exactly. The FCPA, again, provides a bit of a roadmap here. When you have a probabilistic standard like high probability, it's not scientific. It's not a bright line. In the few instances where it's gone before U.S. courts in an adjudicative setting, courts usually lump together a bunch of pretty egregious facts and say, well, wherever the line is, this is on the high probability side of that line. The government expects companies to be attentive to the guidance, incorporate that guidance into their compliance programs, to look at enforcement actions and say, well, is there something about that other company that got them in trouble that we might be doing as well? In the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act space, the government was very explicit that it expected companies to monitor enforcement developments in their own industries and to be on notice based on what their competitors admitted to.
And we know from the signals, too, that those penalties are going to go up. The other point that hasn't been used is the denial of export privileges. One of the realities that we live in is that there's an uncertainty has definitely increased. New changes and new tools are being used in terms of a policy toolbox. This stuff, it doesn't come out of the blue. It's been in the law. It's been in the full definition of knowledge. It's been in the EARs for nearly 30 years. It's been applied in other contexts. Those companies who can get ahead of it will stand out from their competitors because the world has changed on this. The other thing I think was kind of interesting that we talk about in the article is how this standard is becoming the new national security paradigm. Do you have a few thoughts on that?
Given its plasticity, it's not a surprise that they might then be looking to leverage this in other areas. We've seen it, for example, come up in congressional reports. The Treasury Department adopted it for its outbound investment rule. In promulgating that rule, they specifically pointed to the definition of knowledge in the Export Administration Regulations and the benefit of aligning their knowledge standard with those in the export controls. We've also seen it within the ICTS, the Information and Communications Technology and Services rule set that the Commerce Department has. These are inbound controls managed by the Department of Commerce that we're just starting to see being really used in meaningful ways. There's now a connected vehicle rule. There are various stages of proposed rulemaking on other topics. For people who aren't familiar with ICTS, this is the response to concerns about hostile nations being able to control our electric vehicles or be able to control our power grid or be able to control drones that might be flying in our airspace.
We also talk about the December 2024 Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations report. That report also reflects that move toward that adoption of a high probability standard for enforcement.
Exactly. We're dealing with highly sophisticated state-backed evasion diversion schemes out there. The benefit of the standards is if companies have an objectively defensible way, they are identifying, assessing, and mitigating red flags as they see them. They can point to that to show they don't have the requisite level of knowledge, including awareness, to be fined for the conduct at issue. Near the end of the article, we talk about some key takeaways. Brent, what are the key takeaways?
Well, I think one of these is definitely beware of misreading BS's Know Your Customer guidance and the red flags guidance. Look at that from that high probability perspective. Just a step back from there is make sure that you're doing a risk assessment on the high probability potential exposure that the company may have in its export compliance program. Assess what that may be if that hasn't been already addressed in the compliance program. That'd be step one. Step two then is develop a high probability protocol on how it's going to be implemented through the compliance program. And then number three, do some spot checks to make sure that it is being rolled out through the program as well.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people, for good reason, were waiting and seeing as we transitioned into the new administration. What's the vibe going to be? What's the tone going to be on export controls enforcement? We discussed in one of our first episodes, Secretary Lutnick saying, we have had enough. And if you look at the America First trade policy executive summary of the reports, it's short and simple, but very clear where they're going to be heading with this. To best protect yourself and your company, now is the time to make sure that your risk assessments and your compliance programs incorporate the high probability enforcement standard for those elements of the EAR where it applies. To protect your board and your management, have a discussion with your board and your management where this is specifically discussed. There's some risk, especially for companies under Delaware law, if they happen to get hit with a huge penalty and they never discussed before then what is the high probability standard, some shareholders might say, how could we have missed this? So now is the time. It doesn't take much effort. If you look back at the McDonald's decisions that Brent and I have written about, it doesn't have to be hours and hours and hours of board members' time and attention on this, but it does need to be more than just being told, yeah, we got a guy who does export controls and moving on. There needs to be a discussion of, well, how are we incorporating these standards into our program? And how do we know or why do we think that's working?
The signals from the government are loud and clear. Now is the time to get ready because actions will be coming.
Well, back yet again by high demand is our segment, Brent Carlson's Managing Up. Brent, what's your tip this time for trade compliance professionals? How can they use what's in the Glass Onion article to effectively manage up?
I'd say simplify, simplify, simplify. So if there's a complex issue that's presented there, just break it down and then prioritize where those risks are. We know from the signals that are coming from the government that enforcement risk is going to be around leveraging that high probability standard that the government's going to leverage for enforcement and that companies can also leverage to protect themselves. So think of it that way. If it looks like this big, big morass and the export administration regulations, it looks all real arcane, simplify, simplify, simplify. Look at how to break that down and where those greatest risks are coming from.
It's a great perspective, Brent. And it's also valuable because, frankly, it's the perspective we see from investigative journalists. It's the perspective we would expect to see from the government. Where did sales spike at an odd time? What do we lose because of sanctions and export controls over the last 4 years, and how have we replaced it? That's exactly the type of thing that the government would look at with a high probability mindset and expect you to have done the same. Brent, that concludes our latest episode of Red Flags Rising. We will include in the show notes a link to our Glass Onion article and some useful information to help interpret that. Brent, as always, it's been a pleasure. Be well.
Many thanks. Be well.